Welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name is. Let me go to the phones and Robert. Hi there.
Yes, sir.
How are you? You're on the air. What's up?
How you doing today, Mr. Brown?
I'm fine.
My name is Robert Brooks, and I'm calling because I'm having a hard time. My son was expelled from school last year, and we tried to get him back in school in August of last year, but they told us by him being expelled from a school, he had to be out for a whole year. And I couldn't understand that. And now I'm having such a hard time getting him back in school. And I was just wondering, is there anything, any kind of advice that you can give me or any road you can lead me down to make it easy?
Let me ask a question. He was expelled from his school for what?
Disciplinary actions, not fighting, just his mouth. His mouth was real bad.
Well, wait a minute. Did he cuss somebody out?
He had a couple of those problems. It was just more of him acting out to get out of the school that he was in and to somewhere else.
All right, so the suspension occurred when?
His expulsion occurred in 2011.
Okay, so he was expelled in 2011.
Uh-huh.
And the expulsion was for how long?
No, I take that back, in 2012. I'm sorry. He was expelled in 2012. And his expulsion lasted up a whole year. They said he could not go to school online. He could not go to another district. We couldn't do anything as far as getting him any type of schooling.
All right. And so that 1 year ended when?
It just ended in January of this year, the beginning of January, when the kids went back to school. Now we're
All
trying
right.
to get him back in school.
All right. What grade is he in?
He's going to be in the eighth grade.
Okay, and so he's too young for the Excel Center.
Well, he'll be 15 the 27th of this month.
When you have talked to schools, what reason do they give if it was not fighting, if he was not charged with the crime, then what reason are they giving? The expulsion is over with.
Right, the expulsion is over with, but I'm saying I'm having trouble trying to get him in a district school. They want me to send him back to the alternative school, and I don't understand that.
What district are we talking about?
I was trying to get him in Lawrence District.
Where do you live?
I live in Lawrence.
And so he was expelled from Lawrence?
No, he was living with his mother at the time, and he was expelled from Warren Township.
And Lawrence will not accept him even though he lives in Lawrence. For what reason?
They wouldn't accept him last year because they said when we tried to sign him up, they wouldn't accept it because of his expulsion still was, they said his expulsion still was holding up on him. And we tried to go back to the alternative school and get them to lift the expulsion for him to go to school. But hold on.
Is the expulsion now over with?
Yes, it is.
All right, so since it's over with, what is Lawrence Township's position?
Well, what happened was when we tried to go enroll him last time, we went through all the paperwork and everything like this, and they told us they was going to keep it until we were able to bring him back this January and for him to start school. Now that we taking him back, now they said they can't find none of his paperwork, and now the person that I live with in Lawrence Township, which is my girlfriend, she can't find the lease to the house right now, and we're having problems on getting the lease to the house. So, therefore, they won't let him in school, even though she has two other kids that go to that school.
How does she lose her lease?
I couldn't tell you that, Mr. Brown. I couldn't tell you that.
Has she asked the landlord for a copy of the lease?
We're going through that now, but my mother is my mother is so concerned about getting him back in school, and she wants to know if there's any programs that you can let us know about that may be a better schooling for him.
Have you talked to any of the charter schools out there? Andrew Brown is one. I know there's a couple of other charter schools out there on the northwest side, on the northeast side.
Okay. Well, no, I haven't tried any of them, Mr. Brown. I mean, like I said, I'm not. This is something that I'm not used to going through, is having a child expelled from school. This is my first time. I was never expelled from school before. So and when I was getting expelled from school, they was only doing it for one semester at a time. They wasn't doing it for a whole year.
Usually, somebody expelled for a non-criminal offense, he would have had to have a lot of suspensions on his record for them to expel him. That sounds awful excessive.
Right.
Awful excessive. You might want to talk. When he was in school, how were his grades?
His grades were good.
What has he been doing while he was out of school?
He's been studying, waiting for his chance to get back in school.
Okay. You might want to talk to Andrew J. Brown. That's out there on the northeast side of the city. That's a charter school.
Okay.
They said who lost the records? Warren?
No, Lawrence Township. Lawrence. We went to the learning center in Lawrence, and they say they do not keep paperwork from kids, and they do not accept facts. This is the thing that I was saying.
So why didn't you just fill out the paperwork again?
But this is the thing. We have to have the lease, and what we were going to do was we was going to have the landlord fax the lease to them. They don't accept faxes.
Hold it. Is the landlord in Indianapolis?
Yes, he is.
You go over to the landlord's office or the landlord. You watch while the landlord prints out a lease or makes a copy of the lease, puts it in an envelope, gives you the envelope, and you drive it back over to Lawrence. This is not brain surgery.
Mr. Brown, I know that much, but this is what I'm saying right here. With the way she works, and she works from 6 in the morning to almost 6 in the evening, so when she gets out by her being the head of the household, the rental office or her landlord is closed down for the day.
All right, hold on. I'm asking, does she have email?
Yes, she does.
She asked the landlord to electronically email a copy of the lease to her.
Okay.
And see, the landlord can email it as a Word document or what they call a PDF file.
Okay.
And then you email that to the school district.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brown. I appreciate your time.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. Let me go to Tandra. Hi there.
Hi. I am new to the area. I just relocated here in Indianapolis. And I've been having some trouble with my son's school. He was going to Northwest. And right before school ended, he had got suspended for a fight altercation. And then there was an incident where he ended up having to go to the hospital because he and another child was horse playing at the school. And so what ended up happening is that him and the other kids, he ended up getting a concussion. So I felt like that my son was not being supervised properly, and I asked for him to be transferred to another school.
Okay.
So far, I've gotten the runaround. Northwest decided that finally that they would give him the transfer today. He's been out of school all week.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me to have to go down to the district to go and have a conversation with them and then go back and forth to the school, and they finally gave me a transfer. And it'll be effective tomorrow. But my issue is that now they're saying they're not going to provide transportation because they don't feel like it's a safety issue. And I'm like, my son is not being supervised properly. He gets a concussion, has to be taken from Northwest High School all the way to the hospital. And you're telling me it's not a safety issue and you're not going to provide transportation for my son. I have to provide it for him. Because I want him in a new school. I'm not sure
In the conversations you had with the school, were these on the phone or were these face to face?
They were on the phone.
So you did not have a face to face conversation with the principal or the vice principal about any of this?
No. And when I went down to try to get his paperwork today, they sent me to the someone's office, and they wouldn't even give me the transfer paperwork today. But then I had a call from someone who works downtown at the district. I guess her name is Dr. Greenwald or Greenwood, something like that.
Yeah, Jackie Greenwood. And what did Jackie say?
That they were going to go ahead with the transfer, but they're not going to provide transportation for him.
Yeah, I'm not sure it is the policy to provide transportation.
Even when it's a health risk situation for your child?
The threat is from where? If he's being transferred to another school, I don't see where the threat is.
Well, I felt like that, okay, he's been in altercations with the same kid, and this kid has been in just about every one of his classes. And this last incident, they say they were horse playing. The kids were horse playing. I still haven't got any written documentation from the school on that incident. And from what I understand, that the police was called. They did an investigation, but they haven't said anything else to me as far as who all was involved in it and how everything went down. But I just feel like that if my son keeps getting into altercations with the same students, and then now there's an incident where they were supposed to be horse playing and my son receives a concussion and I want him transferred, because I don't feel like that the
And what school what school are they what school are they transferring him to?
They're gonna transfer him to Washington. He was
okay.
At Northwest.
He was in Northwest down to Washington, which is the closest school. Jackie Greenwood is pretty good people. What you might want to do is, you know, get it. You know, you're going to have to schlep him to Northwest, not Northwest, to Washington. But you want to make an appointment with Miss Greenwood to sit down and talk to her face to face. Tell her you talked to me on the radio.
Okay.
And that I suggested it. And
okay.
That you really want to be able to talk to her face to face so that she understands what your situation is. She may still tell you no. Okay? Understand
okay.
That. She may still say no. That's not the policy. Okay?
Okay.
But I think you need to have that face to face. A lot of times these conversations over the phone don't get things settled. Okay?
They really don't, because I just felt like that they're just brushing me off.
No, I understand that, but I think call her and say that I don't necessarily say on the radio, but say you call my office and I said and encourage you to try to get together with Miss Greenwood face to face.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for your time.
All right, I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310. This afternoon's name. There's always all kind of issues coming up. Now, a lot of people that listen to this program, you are of the AARP age. You're getting up in age, and as the number of senior citizens in this city and area grows, right now in Marion County, one out of every five individuals over the age of 65 are African American. It is a growing group. Some of us that are getting older, we're hip. We're modern. We may, to us, retirement is a little bit different than it might be for others of you who might be a little bit older than that. And a fight is brewing among people that build nursing homes. Evidently, there is a cap, or the people that already have nursing homes want to put a cap on the number of available nursing home slots in the state of Indiana. Which makes no sense to me, because I thought usually here in Indiana we're trying to grow business, not contract business. And there's a group of people that are putting together and building different types of, they don't even want to call it nursing homes because that's not necessarily what they do. And they're running afoul of people trying to limit the availability of nursing homes. Sam Mishlau is with one of a number of organizations that are trying to provide these services, and he joins me live. Sam, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Amos. It's a pleasure to be here with you today in the hustle and bustle of the State House. So
what is the issue? Is part of this is, I mean, everybody knows that the number of people over the age of 60 is going to increase in this country over the next 10 to 15 to 20 years. Is it that what's the issue? It seemed to me that people would want more of these kind of facilities.
Oh, I definitely agree. You know, the argument is that there's enough capacity of comprehensive care facilities, long-term care facilities, nursing homes, however you want to phrase it, that there's enough capacity already, enough available beds, to meet the demand in the short term. But our argument is that the reason that there's that capacity is that individuals that are retiring are choosing other options other than going to the facilities that exist today. And so the solution has been free enterprise, that new nursing homes, new skilled nursing facilities that represent modern facilities where you might want to put your loved ones are now entering the market. And as you mentioned, let the market dictate what the capacity is. And so we've been very fortunate to have built several of these facilities all over Indiana, in all over rural areas, urban neighborhoods. We have a new facility at 16th and Arlington. We have one that just finished in Westfield, one in Avon.
You got really one in Pike Township?
One in Hendricks County. Yep, it just opened. So, you know, the argument we heard this morning was, well, these are just in the urban areas, the developed areas. And I would debate that to say 16th and Arlington or Crawfordsville or Avon or Westfield or Noblesville. You know, I would say these are rural communities that so desperately need economic development. And for the people in that community that have loved ones that need long-term care, they want a facility in their community.
Is there a generation gap among consumers of nursing home? And when I say a generation gap, people who were brought up as baby boomers, they may want to be in a facility that's different than maybe the facility that their parents were placed in. Is there that kind of gap, and you're kind of filling that need?
I think that's part of it. I think you kind of mentioned it before I came on, is that the retirees of today, people in their 70s, you know, were probably more aware from a technology standpoint. The amenities that they want are probably different than the last generation. And so the facilities that are being built, the long-term care facilities, are being built to handle the needs of the current generation of retirees. And they're beautiful facilities, and we see no reason why state government should intervene and make it impossible for the market to dictate what's built.
So the only reason they give is there's some empty beds somewhere, and seniors or their children should be forced to place where there's an empty bed, whether that's convenient for you or not.
Well, that's in essence their argument. Our corresponding argument is that in the free market, consumers should have a right to choose where they put their loved ones, where they retire. Is it a nursing home, or is it a new skilled nursing facility that has the amenities that you might want for your loved ones? And we're just here to say, let free enterprise dictate. Let the free market dictate.
Is African American a growing part of the nursing home market?
You know, Amos, I don't know that I am aware of the demographics of that, but my individual opinion would be they are. The growing number of African Americans that are retiring, they should have the choice of facilities that are chosen for them, or they choose. And you know, I think this issue spans every demographic across every marketplace in Indiana. So
I think the reason that I ask this question is that particular industry, I don't think, has recognized the fact that the African American senior population is growing. And they really have not reached out to that community. And it may be because the perception of African American communities is it's a younger population than the white community, which is true. But they have not recognized that is a growing market and reached out to that market.
You know, it's certainly a good point, but I think you know, the future of the long-term care industry I think it's necessary because it serves the entire marketplace. And I think, you know, it's it would be a shame if consumers of all types, of all demographics, were forced into the existing physical facilities that exist today versus letting innovation and new construction rear its head and let the marketplace dictate who succeeds and who doesn't.
Now, this is a Senate bill. What's the bill number?
173.
Senate Bill 173. Well, see, I'm going to have to educate the folks on the House, State Representative Robin Shackelford. This is an issue about the regular nursing home industry. They're trying to limit the number of new entrants coming in, saying that there's too many beds already. And they're going in places like 56th and Georgetown, 16th and Arlington. That's near where we live. You know, and some of us getting older and can't do that. I thought the Republicans believed in free market, and they're trying to limit them. If people want more information, how do they get a hold of them?
You can give me a call, Sam Michelot, probably the best way to reach me. My direct number is 317-813-6143 at Meyer Najum. Our office is headquartered in Fishers, Indiana. But I grew up on the south side, was raised in Marion County at 64th and Greenview. So, you know,
you're honorary hood.
Well, I rode the bus. You know, I tell people, what are you famous for? It's like, I don't know. I rode the bus with Babyface. So, you know, so.
That
thing, so.
All right. Sam Michelot, thank you.
Thank you, Amos. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. Legislators are coming out because they just heard the Chief Justice talking about the state of the judiciary. And I understand he raised the issue about the small claims courts, that the court has done some cleanup, but that it's time for the legislature to do that. But I gather nobody has introduced legislation. And the Chief Justice was begging y'all to help him out.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that there was a problem.
Let me ask you, while I got you here, we've been talking about a couple of issues, and this whole issue of what the governor talked about yesterday, what the Republican leadership has talked about, nobody has talked about anything that would raise the level of income of the people in your districts, Vanessa Summers and Robin Shackelford, that would reduce the outrageously high levels of unemployment here in Marion County. Is that the biggest failing of Republicans, is they're dealing in issues that aren't going to impact people's lives?
I think that is one of the major issues. They spoke about economic development and increasing people's actual income. But to have such a majority, I would think that would be their number one issue. And I haven't seen any bills, any legislation come across where average Hoosiers can say, I have seen an increase in my paycheck.
And the other thing is they're talking in all of these side issues. Like last night, what really shocked me about the governor was throwing Common Core under the bus officially, publicly, and that means if you take him at his word, that means they would stop teaching to the test.
Yes, that would be lovely, wouldn't it? But I think that our Republican members are looking for solutions to problems that we don't even have. You know, they're making up problems to come up with solutions instead of dealing with the real problems that we face here in Indiana, especially in our communities with the unemployment rate and in the schools and how they are funded.
I tell you what, I need to take a break. Hang with me, because obviously the Chief Justice done left. I saw him go back upstairs, and we've got several of the members of our General Assembly. They'll tell you the issues that you need to be concerned with. 239-1310, 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. We're live at the legislature starting our 11th year, bringing all this to you. We'll be back after these. All right, we're just having a caucus out here. That's what we like about it. Let me start over here with State Representative Robin Shackelford. What are the key pieces of legislation that you're dealing with that the community needs to be aware of?
One of my key pieces is the transparency on the state spending on their MBE and WBE expenditures. So I'm going to be bringing a piece of legislation, House Bill 1044. I'm trying to get a hearing, so if people want to write in, We want to see what the state is actually spending on those minority businesses and women-owned businesses. And we know right now the state is not meeting our goals.
So even though when you look at the list of minority businesses, they do identify what's an African-American, what's an Asian, what's a female-owned business, you don't have the totals of how much actually has been spent with black-owned businesses, with Asian-owned businesses, with Hispanic-owned businesses, with women-owned businesses?
Correct. That information is not accessible online. So I'm wanting that information to be accessible online and also to be detailed out by department, by state department. So we can see how much the Department of Transportation spent, how much Environmental Department spent, how much FSSA spent, so that information is detailed out.
And I thought the Pence administration was going to be the administration of transparency.
Yes, we hope and they will. We're just trying to give them a push with this legislation because apparently there's been some bumps in the road.
No, not bumps in the road from the administration. State Representative Cherish Pryor, what are your priorities? What does the community need to be aware of?
I have a couple of pieces of legislation that I'm carrying. One is a bill dealing with the Tax Increment Finance Commission, or TIFs, and that is not eliminating TIFs, but making sure that TIFs do not take away from the local units of government, and trying to encourage the mayors and the communities to work with other taxing units so nobody is being harmed by TIFs. So I think I'm enhancing what is already there. So I have that TIF bill. Another bill that I'm dealing with is juveniles. Last year we had House Bill 1006, which revised the adult criminal code. My bill is kind of like a trailer bill where we'll look at and evaluate whether or not we need to change the sentencings for our juveniles as well. So we've dealt with the adults, and we have a bill that's going to clarify some of that this session. But my bill goes a little bit further, and so that we make sure we take care of our kids and juveniles as well as taking care of our adults as well. So those are my two main bills that I have this session.
State Representative John Bartlett, first of all, Happy New Year. Good to see you. What are your priorities?
Well, I've got two, Amos. First off, I want seatbelts on school buses for our babies. I've been working with that for a few years now, and I'm going to try to make that happen this year. And the second piece is we need to stop and take a look at violence and violent crime. I don't think putting police officers on the street is an answer to violence and violent crime, because you don't call a policeman until after the crime has been committed. We need to look at the lack of education. We need to look at the lack of jobs or access to economics. And we need to look at the chemicals that they put in our food. When you have a 10, 11-year-old kid walking into a school in the state of New Mexico pulling the trigger, when you have a 23, 24-year-old young man walking into a school in Newtown, Connecticut, shooting 5- and 6-year-old babies and then turning the gun and actually shooting and killing his own mother with no remorse whatsoever, that's a mental health issue. It's not a public safety issue.
Let me get State Representative Greg Porter and State Representative Vanessa Summers. What are your priorities in this legislature?
We're going to file a bill that dealing with bias crimes again. It's always on there, but we're going to continue to address bias crime legislation here within our state.
We just had something where somebody burned a cross down on one of those southern counties, and there was nothing the police could do because it wasn't a hate crime.
Exactly. So that's a big issue with us. That's down in court in Indiana, as a matter of fact. That's where it was. That was this past summer. We're going to also continue to just try to tweak some of the issues in regards to education. The voucher situations out here, make sure that public schools are really included in this whole voucher initiative. But, you know, their whole concept is to expand the voucher program for just a few, not for all million-plus students here in the state of Indiana.
Sister Vanessa Summers, what are your priorities? What are the community to be aware of?
Well, basically, I'm dealing with some children's issues and the regulations of child care facilities and trying to make sure that all are included, child care homes, child care centers, and child care ministries.
Let me ask you, in terms of money, Greg Porter, you're on the ranking member of Ways and Means. This is not a budget session, but the governor has come out with some stuff that's going to cost money. Where the money at?
We have $2 billion in our surplus right now, but to my knowledge, I've been around for a long time. We never open up the budget this time of year. However, all his initiatives, three or four of his initiatives, does have fiscal impact. So we're trying to figure out where the money's going to come from or if he's going to do it. is open up for the money. We've had some state agencies that have already reverted like 3 to 5% of their budget. They ask them for another 1.5% to revert back to the general coffers of our state of Indiana. So we're trying to figure. We have Ways and Means tomorrow. We'll begin to try to see how this unfolds when it comes to the budget and programs that our governor wants. I mean, he's looking for $400 million for road transportation. But you remember, Amos, a few years ago when we passed major moves, that's supposed to be money forever and a day.
That money gone.
That money gone bye-bye. And so that's an issue that people forget, because when we sit there, we say, well, we made $135,000 in the last hour and interest off this $3.8 billion or $4.8 billion, whatever we had. Now, 5 years later, the money's gone. Now we got to find $400 million to continue to address the crossroads of America.
Let me get you about a bill that I was made aware of this morning. It's starting over on the Senate side, Senate Bill 313, sponsored by the man who brought us 621, Senator Young. That's Senator Young. And the bill would, if the police show up at a place at least 5 times a year, and a police report is generated each of those times, then the police department may levy a fee, and that fee could be up to $100 levied against the property owner. Representative Cherish Pryor is giving me this look like, what?
Well, I am, because if it's a case of domestic violence, then that woman will not want to make that 6th telephone call, because they're going to be levied a fee. The purpose of us paying taxes is for public safety and everything else that we need. And to add an additional fee on somebody tells them, you're not welcome to public safety. You're not welcome to have police and fire protections, but you pay property taxes.
The other thing in the proposal seems to be, if police make a lot of police runs to a particular location, they want the ability to assess a fee against that property owner, which raises the question, if a majority white bar in Broad Ripple has those runs, will the fee be assessed to them, or will they only assess the fee to night spots on 38th Street? I know the answer to that question, but
you're right. I mean, the answer is on 38th Street, okay? There'll always be a way to get out of it. You know, that reminds me, in regards to these fees and assessments, as a state, not the Black Caucus, we strangle local government so much that we begin suffocating with the public safety area. And so is this a way to recoup those dollars now? Is this an action step to say, okay, we're going to pay for these services, and paying for these services, we will assess you a fee if you have 5 runs? Now, I know it happens if you have false alarm at your home in regards to alarms and things like that. After the second, third, it's a $50 assessment. But that's because of your own issues with your at home, false alarms. So does this mean now we're going to have to not only pay taxes, but on top of that, pay more money for an incident that may happen with a property that you may own?
Let me go to Brother Warren at 239-1310. How you doing?
Hello, Emma. How you doing?
I'm fine. What's up?
Emma, I have a question here.
And, okay.
It's concerning an accident I had back in 2012.
All right.
I was rear-ending. I got hit in the rear end up on 70.
Right.
On 70, I-70, westbound.
Okay.
Okay. And my insurance and their insurance, all the people that was involved. And I had Ken Nunn. It was represent me.
Ken Nunn represented. So what happened?
Ken Nunn represented me for a year.
Yeah.
And after the year, he dropped the case. Okay.
He all dropped right, the case.
So, yeah, but he recommended me to take him to small claim court.
Okay.
So when I took him to small claim court over there off Washington, Post Road and 10th Street there. And
Warren Township small claim. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I took him to small claim court.
Right.
And the person that hit me, I didn't know. It was a company called MCD Ventures, the box truck. Okay.
All right, so what happened in small claims court?
he sent me a letter. He sent me a letter. The 31st. He sent me a letter on the 31st.
Right.
He sent me a letter saying that that he found that my case is I didn't prove my case. And I'm sorry. This is a question I want to ask you.
Wait a minute. Did you go before the judge?
I went before the judge. I presented my case.
And the judge ruled. Ruled against you, correct?
The judge ruled against me.
Did you appeal?
I haven't appealed yet because I just got the ruling on the 31st of last month.
Yeah, you okay? So you're going to have to appeal.
But who do I appeal to?
You go back to the office of the small claims court and ask for the procedures to file an appeal. The appeal is going to have to be filed downtown in real court.
Okay. Hey, can I ask you something else?
You got 10 seconds.
Okay, Amy, look. When all my paperwork, the judge sent me a letter, but he did not send me my paperwork.
You asked the court office for the paperwork.
Okay. All right.
That is your right. That's public record.
Thank you.
All right, you're quite welcome. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. I'm going to have to go over there. That's a deep conversation over there with Senator Delf and the is that state treasurer?
Yes, state treasurer Richard Murdoch.
Really? I haven't seen him in a long time.
Well, he was here last night at the State of the State, and he showed up again for the State of the Judiciary. So he's been around. Low-key, but he's been around.
Because I'm nice, I'm not going to intrude on their conversation. I'm going to take a break.
Okay, I was going to go and try to distract them a little bit for you, but...
No. They deep in thought over there. 239-1310, 239-1310. We'll talk to a state senator, Mike Delf, just so we can be bipartisan, because we're here in the People's House, and we'll be back with more in our remaining moments. It is Afternoons with Amos. We're live from the legislature. More after these. And in the 11 years that we've been live from the legislature, all parties, tribes, factions, and folk are welcome, and that includes Republicans, State Senator Mike Delf. Mike, Happy New Year.
I'm feeling the love, Amos. Happy New Year to you, buddy.
Fine. There's more than one potential constitutional amendment that this legislature is going to be considering, and you're introducing it, and it has some timeliness given what, you know, the Academy Awards are probably going to nominate that movie 12 Years a Slave that really talks about the sins and the evil of slavery. You've got a potential constitutional amendment put forward. What is it?
It's SJR 15. I've been working with a number of community activists here in Marion County in particular, and it would clean up our state constitution to have a direct statement on the issue of slavery and involuntary servitude so that we can point to the state's abhorrence to those two issues.
So even though the federal constitution trumped that part of Indiana's constitution, Indiana never took that language out.
That is correct. And it's my hope that this project would be seen as an olive branch and as an act of goodwill to try to bring everybody in the African-American community together for this purpose. And I hope to make that case over the next several weeks.
And what this would do would be to eliminate the language in the constitution that says, make sure that there's no confusion, that there's no slavery, but still allow for incarceration if somebody breaks the law.
That's right. People that are lawfully, with due process, convicted for a crime need to serve their sentence and pay their debt to society. We're not dealing with that. So we're taking that language that was part of that amendment originally and moving that to another part of the Constitution so we can have a standalone statement on the issue of slavery and involuntary servitude.
Does this also make it very clear, because something that came up through the Attorney General a couple of years ago when we were dealing with the Super Bowl about child slavery, people that are enslaving young women to do the worst of things, that make it very, very clear that that kind of conduct not only is impermissible by statute, it is impermissible by our Constitution.
You know, Amos, you're raising an excellent point. When we were dealing with the issue of illegal immigration, I talked insistently about the fact that folks that are illegally in the country are oftentimes enslaved and have no freedom. And so that is a modern-day American slavery that I think exists. I don't believe that slavery exists as it did back in the 1800s. We've crossed that barrier, but we've not crossed the we've not updated our founding documents to the modern life, and that's what we're trying to do. And in the process, I hope to generate some goodwill to try to reach out to the young people of Marion County and touch their hearts and talk about some other issues.
Let me ask how quickly an education issue that has united some on the right and some on the left, and that is this whole Common Core thing. The governor, you have been outspoken about it from Jump Street. Some people on the left side of the aisle have been outspoken about it. The governor really made it clear last night publicly, unambiguous for the first time.
You know, Common Core at its base level is an issue about state sovereignty. It's about the right of the people of Indiana to set its own agenda and its own academic standards without being dictated to by the federal government or by some outside private entity from the state of Indiana. And so I was very pleased to hear the governor's comments last night. We have a lot of very bright people in the state of Indiana, and we hope to see some rigorous academic standards that are Hoosier born and grown.
Does this also mean that we need to also take a hard look at this teaching to the test, where the kinds of flexibility, we had a conversation about a month and a half ago with two classroom teachers that were very, very honest about they felt that they didn't have the freedom and flexibility to teach and touch and deal with their students because they felt like they were assembly line workers pushing kids toward the test.
Well, there's no question that we have some of that, and we've got to develop, in my opinion, a culture in this state, regardless of age, regardless of race, regardless of income, a culture of lifelong learning that Abraham Lincoln instilled back in the 1800s. We've got to get people to want to learn their entire life.
State Senator Delf, Mike Delf, always good to talk to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Amos. I look forward to coming back.
All righty. That's it for today. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Same time, same station. A special thank you to the office of the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the Speaker and the Minority Leader for their cooperation in allowing us to be here in the People's House so you can hear what the issues are and hear all of the stuff. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow live at 1.